Hello and welcome to the SLP podcast. It's Travis. Today, I am going to be honest that it has been a hard couple weeks for me. That doesn't matter because I still got a great show for you today. And when I say it doesn't matter, it does matter a little bit, but maybe I can make it a little bit of entertainment for you in some ways. Maybe like, what is that Les Mis, you know, musical that my wife and I just watched where it's like pain is entertainment, but maybe it's a little bit of that. So anyways, our basement flooded with a backed up sewer. I've mentioned that in a pod. That was really unfortunate. And luckily we are on the path to recovery from that. It was a big tropical storm that hit the area. A lot of the local businesses we like to go to got destroyed too. So it's been quite a past couple weeks. In addition, today our internet went out. I don't know if that's connected, but like it just feels like everything's kind of happening at once. And I made a mistake on a student loan thing, which I usually don't do. The mistake that I made was in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, OBBBA, it says that you no longer have to have a partial financial hardship to be able to get into IBR. Now, an earlier version of the bill also removed the cap on IBR payments, but then I realized that in the new version of the bill, the one that actually passed, it retained the cap on IBR payments. It just removed the partial financial hardship requirement to access IBR. So that's a good thing because what we think it means is that people will be able to access the standard 10-year plan effectively through IBR if they make too much money to qualify for the straight up 10 or 15% of income payment. One of the big problems with this giant bill that just passed is this. It's got a lot of written out verbiage and language about what's going to happen with student loans in the future. But the real big problem with it is that there's a ton of rules and regulations and things like that that need to get written for it to become actionable. Obviously, the current administration does not believe in the Department of Education existing. That is creating a little bit of chaos in the sense that Department of Ed is not really able to issue on-time guidance to the student loan servicers so that they can do their job according to what the law is. Anywho, I just wanted to share some information about this so that people could be aware of what timelines might look like for the implementation of this bill. This already passed. It's already law, right? And then this One Big Beautiful Bill Act has got all these provisions that take into effect over the course of the next couple to few years. So the first thing that sort of takes into effect right away is actually some of the tax law changes. So there's a lot of like tax law changes coming up with things like the state and local tax deduction, 40K phasing out above 500K of income, you know, instead of 10K, that's a big difference. That's actually creating some unique marriage tax penalties and completely independent of student loans that we maybe could talk about in our Financially Free Era podcast by SLP Wealth. If you want to hear more like wealth growth kind of stuff and not just hear me talk about student loans all the time, definitely go follow the Financially Free Era podcast. And you can just type in Financially Free Era, ERA. It's run by my colleague, Megan McGuire. It's a great show, a lot funnier than me. So definitely go listen to Financially Free Era, wherever you're listening to podcasts. So anyways, the student loan changes for this One Big Beautiful Bill Act, those changes, for the most part, start to happen July 2026. So not a whole lot changes between now and July 2026. The RAP plan, the repayment assistance plan that they passed as part of this bill, this new income-driven repayment plan, that is probably not going to be available until 2026, we think, unless there's some sort of miracle where it's available sooner. While the save interest forbearance is ending August 1st, there's not going to be any more subsidized interest. The save payment forbearance theoretically would last until as late as July 2028. Now, let me tell you that I don't think it's going to last that long, and I'll explain why. This lawsuit that's being brought against the save plan currently is trying to strike down the save plan in its entirety, essentially to make sure that it's just completely buried instead of just partially. What this save payment forbearance does is it allows you to not make payments, but it doesn't count for anything. So the new bill that passed is essentially limiting forbearances. I believe it's to like 9 months within a 24-month window. And that's nothing compared to what the old rules were. The old rules were you could do 3 years of forbearance in a row, 12 months, 12 months, 12 months. So 36 months of forbearance versus nine in a 24-month period. That's a very small amount of forbearance. That might be the save plan forbearance might be an indirect way where borrowers who are really struggling financially could potentially pause their payments while they tackle other financial priorities like paying off credit card debt. Now, people listening to this podcast, I think almost nobody should be staying in the save plan forbearance past August 1st. I'll tell you why. Basically, it's because that it doesn't count for anything. It doesn't do anything for you. If it's not doing anything for you, you shouldn't do it. because if you're going for PSLF, you're going to have to do buyback if it exists, and you do buyback with your tax returns once the forbearance is longer than a year. So you would be paying a huge amount of money anyway, so you might as well get an active repayment plan and not have to deal with buyback. For people going for 20 or 25 or even 30-year RAP forgiveness one day, RAP forgiveness is the 30-year plan, that is something that you'd prefer to count rather than not count. So it's better to be on a plan that counts for that, and this save forbearance does not count for that. Now, if you're paying back your loans, if interest is accruing normally anyway, then there's no real benefit to keeping them in the save plan forbearance. I guess maybe the only exception to that would be if you had, I guess there's always an exception to everything is what I learned in student loans, right? I guess if you had like 10 different loans and a couple of them were like 2, 3, 4% interest, they're kind of low interest, maybe you could refinance the higher interest rate loans alone and then keep the paused payments and the stuff that's low interest under the save plan forbearance and then focus all your payments on the private stuff to try to pay that off more aggressively instead of having to also put money into the low interest federal loans. So maybe that's the only reason that people paying back their loans might want to stay in the save plan forbearance in some capacity. But most people have interest rates north of 5% on at least the big loans that they have. And so most people that need to pay back their loans, and they know they need to pay back their loans, I will say that there are some decent interest rates out there in the low 5% range right now. And when you compare that, a lot of people have 6, 7, 8% interest rates for a lot of the graduate school loans taken out the past couple of years. That's actually pretty attractive if you're able to have a $200,000 balance and you're paying 5% interest instead of 8. You know, that's a $6,000 a year interest savings. That's not insignificant. If you need to apply to refinance or see what your rates are, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/refi, R-E-F-I. Or you can just go to the website and click around and find it. But studentloanplanner.com/refi is going to allow you to get to the spot where you need to be. You know, if we think about the next phase of student loans, what is it going to look like? Well, theoretically, they've extended the IDR recertification over and over and over and over again, right? In terms of pushing out when they have to turn in your tax returns. I think it's quite likely that people will be recertifying their incomes in the next few months, like in 2026. Now, think about the save plan forbearance ending with the interest forbearance ending. We got no notice of that at all. It just happened. It was an announcement with 2 or 3 weeks notice. I would not be super shocked either if the Trump administration was just like, hey, guess what? Everybody's got to turn in their income documentation next week. I mean, not next week, that'd probably be too fast, but you know, in 3 weeks or something like that. And maybe that's even a little bit too aggressive because technically the interest subsidy ending just requires the flip of a switch versus getting everybody's information to recertify. It would create a ton of call volume, would create a ton of paperwork that the servicers would have to do. So maybe that would take a lot longer than 3 weeks. But, you know, this administration is ready to start moving quickly on student loan related items because they're trying to, you know, essentially move in a different direction from what the Biden administration did. I will talk in a separate pod, I think, about the impact on higher education from all of this. I think the impact on higher ed is like really fascinating and really interesting. And I think that deserves its own podcast, frankly, to talk about that. Other big changes that I'm thinking about currently, I'm thinking a lot about married filing joint and separate. I'm thinking a lot about the people pursuing PSLF and how while people currently are getting it, people in the future will not in a very strong way. And I'll talk about that. Maybe I'll talk about that next, actually. So like PSLF, if you have hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans and you're a physician, you're getting those forgiven, you're kind of protected because the parliamentarian and the Senate kind of protected you. You're getting to continue out your path on getting PSLF forgiveness, absent any shocking regulatory changes in negotiated rulemaking that the Trump administration is working on right now, which could happen, just to be clear, right? They could pull back on eligibility from PSLF employers with negotiated rulemaking. I don't think it's going to be at scale. I think it would mostly be targeting small immigration nonprofits and things like that. But it's something to pay attention to, not to be worried about, but to be paying attention to just in case. The concern that I have about PSLF is if you have loans limited at just $200,000 total for a professional school, right? The loan limits for graduate programs, I believe, are $100,000. And that's aggregate, I'm pretty sure. I've got to double check the bill. The bill is just like, it's very dense. It takes a while to read everything because things are being struck out of one section and added to another. Everybody in the student loan expert space that I know is kind of calls each other and talks through the bill pretty regularly to say, hey, did you see something? Did I miss something? What does this section read? What do you read about this section? What are your thoughts about how the servicers would implement this? That's kind of a helpful thing to talk through with other friends, basically, that I've made in this. That's one of the positive things about being in student loans for as long as I have, is I have some really great friends that I've made from being in this. Yay. But in terms of your next steps, what do you do? Big thing I would say is please do not panic. A lot of good things happened at the last second with this bill, given that it passed. The overall bill is not good news for borrowers, but it's not horrific news. For existing borrowers, I would call it mildly negative, because it does kick off people from pay to IBR. That's not good. It does preserve things like PSLF. It preserves new IBR. It preserves old IBR. In some ways, it helps Parent Plus borrowers more easily access income-based repayment by taking away the need to double consolidate. Overall, it's okay that they did what they did, in the sense of the Senate parliamentarian prevented any of the most sort of extreme parts of the bill from going through. And so what you have is a major student loan reform that primarily impacts the future rather than the present. And in terms of the impact on the future, folks that are enrolled in programs right now, especially if you have to borrow after July 2026, have a lot of decisions to make. So if you're needing to borrow beyond July 2026, the concern that I have is you'd be forced onto the RAP plan, which would be 30 years until forgiveness instead of 20 under new IBR. And actually, that difference is pretty big, right? Because there's a lot of people out there that are new borrowers as of July 2014 that qualify for new IBR, but that if they were going to borrow after July 2026, we get kicked onto the RAP plan, which, remember, 10% of AGI under RAP is much higher than 10% of discretionary income on payer new IBR, because you get a big deduction with those two plans that you don't get on the RAP plan. The concern that I've got is that folks will borrow not knowing that after July 2026, and they'll cost themselves 10 additional years of indebtedness. So hopefully we can kind of get that word out there that if you're going to be borrowing for the fall 2026 semester, probably this time next year, we're going to be raising the awareness to this issue so that folks can be a little bit more careful with borrowing. And, you know, also, frankly, if you have a child that is a freshman in college or a high school senior, I would be thinking about Parent Plus conversations right now. I would be thinking through, well, if you borrow after July 2026, you might be able to borrow what's needed to get them through school, but you, in a case of a Parent Plus borrower, might not be able to get that loan past July 2026, onto any affordable repayment option whatsoever. If I think about the implications of that, that could mean that some very honest conversations need to occur about what you can do to keep someone enrolled in a particular institution. Just being really honest here, brutally honest here, right? Like, if you have the ability to get in-state tuition, you got to really prioritize that like your life depended on it. If you were able to make sure your child is pursuing a degree that would result in a higher income, you might give the child the choice. Hey, you can stay here at whatever university and pursue, you know, accounting and have me go into debt to help you pay for it. Or if you want to find yourself and do something different, then you might have to do it at a cheaper institution. I'm not saying that these conversations are going to be fun. They're not going to be fun, but I think it would be worse to not be honest. And with the changes that are impacting people, especially folks with kids in school right now that are borrowing past July 2026, I think you want to start thinking about some of these tough conversations that you'll need to have probably in the spring. I think start thinking about them now so you can start looking at your options and not make, you know, sort of a panic decision. Like, the thing that bothered me so much about the way they tried to do the Parent Plus bill in the Senate is they were trying to do something and give people absolutely no notice whatsoever and no time to prepare. Like, that's really unacceptable, right? Like, it's not great that they made this change for Parent Plus borrowers to get cut off from everything in 2026 if you're not consolidated. But at least we have a year to help raise awareness, let people know, ask people to tell their friends to let them know. And at least, you know, those folks will be okay if you consolidate before July 2026 for Parent Plus people. And for everybody else, for folks that are just, you know, have their own loans that they're paying back, at least you're okay. You're going for PSLF, you're going for, you know, new IBR. If you're on the pay program, paying an additional 5% of your income, paying 15% instead of 10, right, is not fun. Paying for an additional 5 years is not fun either. But, you know, at the same time, it might just mean that you need to pivot more towards pre-tax retirement savings. It might mean that you need to focus on different kinds of side hustles or activities that don't generate as much income currently that you can defer the income on to not pay the taxes and lose 15% of it now. So like you can build investment portfolios that are even more tax sensitive to be even more careful and aware that you're losing a lot to taxes and to 15% of your income to IBR payments. That's one of the reasons that for SLP Wealth, I've been moving in the direction of building my own spreadsheets for SLP Wealth instead of traditional financial planning software. Because I felt like with this bill passing, with a lot of people getting kicked into old IBR, which is 15% of income instead of 10 with pay, and with you know people potentially being in debt for 30 years instead of 20 or 25, the importance of building like tax-aware portfolios and portfolios and income side hustles that are very careful about generating taxable income, that importance is even higher with the passage of this bill. And I want our planning tools to really focus on tax awareness. How do you lower your AGI? How do you lower dividend income and interest income that's tax inefficient that's hit at really high rate? So that's a little fun pet project of mine working on the sort of SLP Wealth version of the spreadsheet that built SLP. And so I'm excited about that. I've got about 38 tabs on that spreadsheet. Hot dog, go me, haha. Some of the tabs made me want to cry building them because some of it's kind of hard for me. But, you know, it's been fun. I like projects like that. And, you know, if you're an SLP Wealth client, hopefully you'll get to download that spreadsheet and play around with it and bring it up with your financial planner and ask questions about the different topics that are in the spreadsheet that you can cover. My vision with it is that it would be a spreadsheet that would be able to answer most any question like somebody that's building wealth that has student loans would need to answer across multiple different topics. So things like college savings, real estate investing, car ownership, retirement kind of questions. Can I buy this fill in the blank big ticket item, right? Can I renovate my home? All these sorts of questions I wanted to answer in the context of a young or mid-career professional with six figures of debt or who paid off or got forgiveness on six figures of debt, who's having to overcome later starts to things and things like that. So very blessed to be able to do this podcast for as long as I have. I really appreciate when somebody leaves a nice review for it, or you know, when somebody leaves a nice comment or asks a good question on our voicemail. Being in student loans for almost 10 years is definitely taking a toll because it's an unstable industry, right? It's an unstable just policy area, and it, you know, it causes a lot of stress on the people who follow us. We feel that stress. I feel that stress acutely because I'm a people pleaser personality type. And sometimes I want to help people and I can't. Like with some of these last second changes of the Senate bill, it was really challenging for me, incredibly challenging, because I was like, man, if this doesn't change, a lot of people's retirements are ruined. And some of the people were like, Travis, you were so alarmist and you were so over the top and freaking out. And it was totally unwarranted. And it's like, well, I didn't know that the parliamentarian was going to come in at the last second and save everybody. If that parliamentarian had not, everything that I did was 100% the right thing to do. And it would have saved hundreds, if not thousands, of people's retirements from existing versus not existing. So no, I don't feel bad at all for being, you know, slightly on the alarmist side when that Senate bill was almost passing with all these Parent Plus exclusions in it. Because I did my best, and all you can do in life is your best. And, you know, I think it's important. Maybe somebody else is listening to this that beats themselves up a little bit, isn't kind to themselves like they should be. Just know that I see you. I'm a fan of you if you're going through that, because I beat myself up pretty hard. I don't know. I think it's just important to think through, like, when you're working initially, you build up wealth and you build up savings and you kind of reach a point where you're fire or you're financially independent and you keep doing what you're doing. And then it's kind of hard because then you don't have to do what you're doing, but you do it because you want to make a difference. And I'm feeling very blessed that God's allowed me to do this as long as I have. And I'm grateful for just a great community of people that listens to this podcast, gives us feedback on what could be better. We share in the burden together, right? In a lot of ways, like I feel your burden, even though it's not dead in my name, I feel it because I don't know, I just care about you. I care about everybody who listens to this podcast. I want you to one day not listen to this podcast anymore and be really grateful that you listened to it once, but no longer need to. Hopefully you'll forgive my imperfections and continue the ride along if you listen to this. And just know that this can be a summer of peace, summer of rest for all of us. I think we all need it. I know everybody in my world of student loans desperately needs rest because we're all pretty tired. We're doing our best too with consult demand. Just a quick note on that. Our consult calendar continues to be overwhelmed. Economics would say that I should just double the price, and that's how you profit from limited supply. But I'm doing my best to keep the price where it's at and trying to bring in some temporary help that, you know, people that are alumni of Student Loan Planner that moved on but might have a little bit of like weekend evening availability they can help us out with. We're trying to do that as much as we can to offer as much available spots as we can. You know, I guess I shouldn't rule out a price increase at some point, even if it's a temporary one. It's not going to be double. It might be slightly higher just to try to slow down the demand so that we'll be able to serve people who really need it to the extent that we can. But we do have other things planned, just as an FYI. We're probably going to do some webinars for SLP insiders and wealth clients. We're probably going to do some publication of some research that we did on some surveys on salaries that I'm kind of excited about to share to try to make sure people are paid fairly. And it's just, again, I just can't stress enough how much of a blessing it is to have good listeners like you in my life and in my inbox. I love and appreciate the kind words so much because, you know, I think I've been taking stuff a little hard lately, just to be honest, because it's been very stressful past few weeks trying to hold it together for borrowers, try to keep producing that good content that helps people, all while not being the one who's responsible for passing this bill. You know what I mean? So anyways, hug a student loan consultant in your life. Just kidding. Thank you, everybody. Again, know that if you're tired sometimes, you beat yourself up, you feel like you can't win, you're in the service business, you're doing your best. And, you know, it's just, it's a hard thing and it's okay. And it's just, know that I see you and thank you again for listening to the pod. If you're more of a visual learner or you like seeing charts, breakdowns, and exploring other topics, check out our Student Loan Planner YouTube channel. We've got quick explainer videos, deep dives, smart money tips you can actually see in action. Just search Student Loan Planner on YouTube and hit subscribe.